Welcome to the Mesa City Council study session for April the 26th. I know Mr. Luna is traveling, and I think Mr. Redio will be here. The first item on our agenda for today's meeting is item 1A, to hear a presentation and provide direction on a proposed sales tax for public safety. Thank you, Mr. Redio. We knew you were going to be here. Welcome, Candace.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Previously, we had come to the Mayor and Council on March 22nd and given kind of an overview of property tax and sales tax here in the city of Mesa, what our current rates are and what our current levels were. And today what we do is we want to come back and talk to you specifically about a public safety sales tax and propose an election to the voters to look at some needs that those particular departments have. When the departments came both in the proposed budget for 18-19, as well as both departments, the police department and the fire and medical department, both came before you and talked about their budget and their needs and their opportunities and their challenges that they have. Challenges in population growth, overall increase in the calls for service that both departments are receiving. They also both talked a little bit about mental health calls and how those calls are increasing, as well as they take a little bit longer on those calls and taking for our patrol officers and our fire personnel. We also have geographical issues that both departments are dealing with. East side and west side of the city both have different types of issues that they're dealing with. On the east side, the population is growing, and we have geographic areas where there's just a large spans of time, of area that someone needs to go to for a response on the call. On the west side, they're also dealing with increased call volumes, which is resulting in a concurrency issue, meaning multiple calls within the same area for the same unit, causing other units to have to come in and backfill for those calls. So there's just some opportunities and challenges that we have going forward in a city that's growing. So we are a growing city, and that's great, but it does pose some challenges for us. When we look at our sales tax rate that we have here in the city of Mesa, the total sales tax rate that a resident would pay is 8.05%. The city of Mesa portion is 1.75%. And you can see those in the top left-hand side of this. And it's broken into three different areas. And the next one I have a little bit broken out a little bit better. We have a general fund category, which is 1.2% of the sales tax rate. General fund is unrestricted in nature. Quality of life is at 0.25%. That is currently only spent on public safety for personnel in the police department and the fire and medical department. And then our local streets portion, which is 0.3% of 1%. And that is dedicated to our local streets, so streets repair and maintenance. We were asked to look at different levels of increases that could possibly support public safety and their growth and their challenges that they have. And what we have come back to you is with a 0.25% rate adjustment that would bring the total city portion of the sales tax rate to 2%. And here we've kind of got it broken down. You can see the categories that we have within the city of Mesa. And we forecasted what that would be, what that increase would be going out through 22-23. We have stayed consistent with all of our other financial forecasts in the fact that we have assumed an economic correction would occur in fiscal year 2021. And that's where you see it takes a little bit of a dip and then comes back up going forward. We have allocated the proposed tax increase by a 60-40 split, which is pretty consistent with allocations that we have done in the past for these particular departments, with a 60% going to the police department and a 40% being used for fire and medical services. So that would be the split. And this really just takes that same number and then splits it into that 60-40 and gives us kind of a ballpark of if this sales tax was increased by 0.25%, these would be the projected funds available for these two types of services that we provide. Based on that, what we're trying to do is making sure that we're taking a conservative view to this. The goal of this is to help them address their challenges by making sure that it's sustainable over time. So we want to make sure that we would not add positions that we would not be able to sustain out past years 5, 6, 7, and 8 and so forth. And so we've taken a look. This is kind of a five-year view. It's just some examples of where we have calculated our current salaries today, 5 years from now. We've taken a very conservative approach. We have taken the maxed out salary of their salary range for particular positions, have added projected pension increases over the next 5 years, as well as medical insurance increases. So this is a fully loaded city cost. This is not the salary to the employee. I want to make sure that that's clear. This is the city cost of those particular positions. So we just gave you some examples of in the police department, the fire and medical department, of both some sworn positions and some civilian positions to give you kind of a range of what we're looking at. When we look at the projected revenues that we feel that the city would receive through that 0.25% increase, we feel comfortable that we could cover about 65 positions within the police department. That's a mix of positions, as well as all of their equipment that includes patrol cars, the replacement of patrol cars, and all the equipment related to a position. And about 45 positions in the fire and medical department. Again, that's a mix of positions. That particular one does not include the large apparatus in that. So we did not include any large apparatus for those positions. Those are usually go through the bond program due to the cost of those. Over the time, we would phase in the positions. These are not 65 and 45 are not positions that we would be able to do all at 1 year. Those would be phased over multiple years, maybe three to five to six years. We would phase in those positions. Over that time, we would have one-time money from the sales tax that would allow us to do some of the one-time life cycle items that the departments have need of. Just some examples are the driving track, resurface the driving track. Also the CAD, their computer-aided dispatch computer system, is up for replacement or upgrade in the next few years, as well as various things like their heart monitors and so forth that are very large ticket dollars. So we'd be able to take care of some of those in the first few years as we phase in the positions.
Mayor and Council, so these are just conservative estimates. We would obviously, I think, as they expected, if this were to go forward and this sales tax would be identified, just as today, we track the dollars that come in for the quality of life to make sure they only go into public safety. And we would do the same thing with these proposed dollars. So if the economy does better than expected, and the dollars maybe come in sooner, we could ramp this up faster. But we wanted to kind of give you a very conservative estimate just so we can manage expectations. But again, we would have a flexibility every year when we come in the budget to show you the forecast for the sales tax and the plan for adding positions and equipment. So we wanted to give at least a framework of where we thought it would be today, just looking out into the future. But every year during the budget, we would look at this and report it to council, and it'd be consistent with our forecast for sales tax in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Thompson, do you have a question?
Yes. Chris, would we be able, if we're not going to ramp up all the positions at one time, would we be able to utilize a portion of that to pay the unfunded liability on the pension?
We could do that.
Mr. Brady, remind us that earlier, about a year ago, we opted for the 25-year payback option on that.
Yeah.
Is there an opportunity to accelerate the
sure.
payback?
Yeah, we okay. can do that. It's just a trade-off, and which would save the city dollars versus making payment on some of these public safety projects that we've listed out here, whether it's a driving track or the CAD. But that would be certainly, we could commit every year to making a payment to the public safety retirement system, and that would certainly help us to reduce interest cost over a period of time. So that would certainly be an option.
Thank you. Additional questions? Let me just say, I support this idea. I am looking forward. I would like to see this placed on our agenda for a formal vote and to call the election. I personally am committed to campaigning to encourage the voters to support this idea. I think it's needed. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had our great police chief and fire chief come in and tell us, frankly, they're doing a wonderful job. And Mesa, we know, is a very safe city. Crime is down and response times are good, but that's not to say that it's going to always be that way, and we don't need to work hard to stay to address the growth that we're experiencing. And we do have some unmet needs right now as a result of the growth that we have. So to me, the need for this is very apparent. And I not only am in favor of it, but I plan on doing everything I can to assist in the campaign to help tell the story so that we can make this happen in our community. Thank you, Mr. Freeman.
Candace, is there one more slide? I see a sales tax rate comparison with all the communities.
That was for
or is that
your
an extra, next presentation.
That was actually just a backup okay. slide.
Maybe you want to just look there. It is. So.
There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So just so we can show, just wanted to show a comparison of how we are with our neighbors, other municipalities within the valley. There are different percentages. We in the city of Mesa, we have one sales tax rate for all of those categories that we discussed. Some of the other ones have different ones. So those are the bold. Bold means it's different than the retail sales tax. So this is just for your information.
Thank you for pointing that out, Mr. Freeman, because sometimes we stop. I mean, we only focus on about half of that list, and Mesa does compare very favorably. When you look at this list, we have nothing on food, and we have, as Candace mentioned, a uniform rate. Other cities really zigzag around. So it's probably worth noting, a couple of years ago, there was an article written that said Mesa is the best big city in the Southwest, and they pointed to two reasons for that. One was our emphasis on education. The other was the fact that we're very affordable. And this is an example of that. And I think tweaking our sales tax up a quarter of a percent doesn't really move us measurably in that comparison, particularly given that I think some of these other cities are going to be making adjustments to their rates as well. So I think we'll still be able to take a lot of pride in the fact that we are very affordable and that we are a very frugal city government. Right. So, Council, is there this is agendized as providing direction. I am in favor of moving this on to a formal Council agenda to call an election and to have a vote on a quarter cent sales tax increase. Is that the consensus of the Council?
I agree.
Okay. We'll place that on the coming Council agenda then.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Candace. The next item on our agenda is to hear a presentation and provide direction on an overview of the five-year capital improvement program. Beth and Scott, good to have you with us.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. This is our continued discussion on the proposed five-year CIP. You recall a few weeks ago we came to you with the utilities side of the capital improvement program. Today, our focus will be on the general governmental side, principally the resource for those projects is in long-term financing through general obligation bonds. We're going to highlight those the programs that utilize that resource. You recall when we talk about projects within the five-year CIP, we differentiate them between things that are funded and things that are planned, where there's a need to complete them. And yet the funding source for those have not been identified. It's part of the planning process, whether it's design, construction, as we phase projects, it takes multiple years to complete them. And so having those projects that are both funded and planned allow us to look at multiple years at one time. As far as funding sources for the general governmental side, it includes our cash sources, be that city sales tax or revenue that's generated from city services. Another important source is grants or regional awards. That includes funding that comes through the Maricopa Association of Governments arterial life cycle program for our streets program, and then the Maricopa County Flood Control District, which supports our storm drain improvements that take place in many areas of the city. A large portion of the general governmental side is financed through the city issuing general obligation bonds, and the debt service is paid for with the secondary property tax. When we talked about utilities, we talked about operations and maintenance, and on the utility side, there isn't a tremendous amount of money that's planned with projects that take place on the utility side, with the exception being the two plants that are under construction today. On the general governmental side, the operations and maintenance planning portion is very important. Many of these projects take a substantial commitment in order to sustain them after they're built. Some of the examples that we've included are the landscape maintenance that takes place at city parks, utility services at city facilities, and then when we staff and support a new fire station. So operations and maintenance is an important aspect when we talk about planning these projects. Now, Beth's going to provide us an overview of the projects, of the status of the projects from our most recent bond elections, 2012 for parks and 2013 for streets and public safety.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm going to quickly cover the parks, public safety, and transportation bond elections that we've had several years back now and the status of those funds and the projects those have gone into. The 2012 bond election for parks in 2012, we were blessed that our voters granted us $70 million in bonds. Staff were able to expand that and increase the program with grants and some additional funding we were able to acquire to support the program, which raised the total cost of the program to just under $78 million. In the program, this is just a quick overview of all of the completed parks bond projects. I think our parks director got out his calculator and figured out there were 48 projects that we've completed with these monies. And that included, I believe, 6 new parks, a new aquatic center, a number of system upgrades for the irrigation system, 6 new playgrounds, new structures at the parks, new signage, new ball field lights at 13 different sites. So we've been able to capitalize on this money and get us quite a number of improvements through the program. Looking ahead, we just have 2 projects to complete that will be completing this year. Eagles is under construction. You've probably seen the big trucks pulling the dirt out of the site now as we speak. It's going to double as a retention basin when we're done. And Signal Butte and Elliott, as part of it started construction, we look to complete that towards the fall. We're completing the design of some of the first park elements to go in. Looking ahead at public safety, but just in conclusion, that is all the money we have of the Parks Fund program from 2012.
I'm sorry. what is currently planned and funded for the Signal Butte Park? I mean, I know we desperately need more fields out there. What is going to happen?
This is just phase one.
Yes, this is just phase one. It's a fairly limited phase one in that we're, of course, doing some of the streetscaping and putting in some pathways along the front of the water plant and then around the plant and then some more native desert improvements, including trails and paths.
Just
and
kind
stuff.
Of so it's just taking care of the buffer side. Around the plant.
It's right
really
the
more
plant.
The perimeter landscaping, yes. And creating a pedestrian. There's a nice...
Around the back.
Okay.
Wash.
So it's not fields. It's more.
This is
all native
buffer.
Some trails through the existing.
Just to create a buffer to the plant,
right?
And yet allow public access around it.
It's just over $2 million. It's really a very small improvement around the plant, with the larger improvements needing to go in future bond elections.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, moving on into public safety. In 2013, the public gave us agreed to $51.7 million in bonds, and we increased that with a grant for the new Emergency Operations Center, which you've been in. So these are the projects we've been able to complete as part of the public safety program, and that includes a new fire station, new dispatch center, new EOC, 8 miles of conduit, over 30 miles of fiber, various equipment like helicopters, aviation hangar remodel. We've packed a lot into this program and been able to get some nice facilities for the public works. Just looking back retrospect, we built 5 fire stations and a new dispatch center in about 7.5 years as we've tried to catch up with our public safety needs in these programs. Looking ahead, we have 1 project left, and this project is only left today because we are in litigation with the contractor. So it remains still.
Mr. Thompson.
Beth, what is the status of that, by the way?
I'm going to let our city attorney take that one.
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, we're currently in litigation with the general contractor. We also have some issues we're trying to resolve with the bonding company. We expect a response back to the from them this Friday, actually, and if we're not able to resolve that, we may have to move forward with our other options. We'll probably have another meeting with this council or a Blue Membleton council in the next couple weeks, actually.
And finally, we come to our transportation bond program in 2013. We had just a little over $79 million of bonds approved by the voters. We do supplement our bond programs with our regional transportation funding and grants as we go along. So a number of our projects are supplemented with those funds. This is just an overview of the transportation projects. These projects are much bigger than what you see here because they're generally linear in nature along the streets. Looking ahead into 18-19, we've been able to fund some projects to at least the beginning phases of some projects for a future 2020 bond election, starting design on a number of them and in some cases construction. Many of them are being funded through our regional transportation dollars, the ALCP money, and federal grants. So that's kind of a...
So, Mayor and Council, this is a list of projects that are being proposed to be funded in this year's budget. So we would be able to continue with our streets program. And as you see, and anticipating that we don't have funding to complete the entirety of some of these projects, and you can see there's a lot of footnotes. So, but there's several projects that we want to continue moving forward, at least with the design element of that. We don't have the funding as far as the general obligation bonds to do the construction of projects, but we do have funding to do design elements on some of these larger projects that are we're out actively discussing with neighborhoods or the result of like State Route 24, anticipating that project to be underway in the next few years. We want to anticipate what we may need to do at Signal Butte, some of the intersections. So this is kind of our plan to move forward with a pretty robust street program as it is here, but anticipating that some of these projects or some of this work is just design elements and would be anticipating a future bond election. And we'll talk about that in the next presentation. But these would be funded in this year's proposed budget.
And this is just them in visual map form. And then I wanted to leave you with this photo. Carrie Kent will tell you I'm a bit of a nag about personal protective safety gear on construction sites. And May 7th through the 11th is Safety Awareness Week for all of our contractors. We try to promote best practices with our growing future Z generation, but you can see here they found a rather unique and innovative way to use hard hats. I don't normally recommend this, but it was a lot of fun that day. We did add a new color this year. We have purple now, so... If you're ever interested, let me know. Following the questions slide, I included quite a number of photos of all the projects. If you'd like to take a little walk down memory lane, I am very pleased to let you know we received a National American Public Works Award this past week for a transportation travel time map for technical innovation. We're really proud of that. We don't get national awards often. And we also were notified that the state's given us an award for the Greenfield Park project. So those are our two latest awards on projects.
Thank you, Beth, the Mayor and Council. Just again, we've provided some backup slides to this presentation, mostly a lot of photos of the projects that were discussed. So if you wanted to see the photos of those, they've been included as background information also.
I love the slides. I love the photos. I got to tell you, I get compliments. I think everybody in this room gets compliments every day on these great park projects. It's fun to see how well they've been received and what high quality projects they are. So, congratulations for spending that money so well. I think we really got our money's worth out of those things. Council, any additional questions? This is just an overview. Do we need any direction?
What we showed you today, just want to make sure you're familiar with what will be in the proposed budget. Our next presentation will talk about what is for future opportunities, but this is just anticipating an update on what's been completed and what we would fund in this coming year.
Okay, great. If there's no other questions, the next item on our agenda is item 1C here, presentation and provide direction on potential future general obligation bond projects, including transportation, public safety parks and cultural projects, and a youth sports complex. Beth and Scott, you're up again.
Thank you, Mayor. This discussion that we'll have goes back to that planning process where we plan for the future. Beth mentioned that the general obligation bond programs were using up those funds for the intended projects, and so we need to look towards the future. From a planning perspective, as we prioritize things, there's lots of components that go into that. Three of the main things that we've looked at is first, where we've completed the initial phase. You may have heard the term shovel ready, where we plan for design and some of the early phases that need to be completed on a project so that when the funding's available, then the project can proceed. We also looked at projects where we control the land. An expensive component can be the land that's associated with a project, but as we have available resources that belong to the city, it helps us in that planning process from a project cost perspective. Then we also looked at the projects that can provide an overall citywide benefit to meet the needs of a growing city. First, we'll look at transportation projects. as you can see, we've marked the projects that include regional funding with them. In terms of planning for streets projects, I'll highlight a few of these. It continues work on the segments of Broadway Road that we've looked at, First Avenue, Arturo reconstructs the streets transportation department and the streets program. They look at the pavement condition index to assess when roadways need to be improved, and they have a long-term plan for those. And then various drainage improvements to continue to support the storm sewer and storm runoff in the city. As far as public safety, the potential projects include a couple of fire stations and the police substation in the northeast area that Chief Batista mentioned. It also includes a proposed evidence facility. Evidence storage continues to be a challenge for police. And then also, Beth mentioned many segments of the fiber network that was completed for public safety sites. This continues that work in order to make sure that there's connectivity to our public safety sites. And I'm sorry, I didn't mention that at the bottom you can see the range that's associated with the cost of these projects. On the parks side, the Mesa Place Sports Complex, you can see the components that are included in that estimate. It also includes the off-site improvements that the city anticipates needing to complete, including street and utility improvements to support the facility. Here's also some future projects to consider on the parks side. It includes a multi-purpose sports field. Potential locations include the Red Mountain Park area, Monterey Park, Elliott Road retention basins, and then also relocating the fields that are over at Riverview Park today. But it includes shared use paths.
Scott.
Excuse me. Mr. Thompson.
I'm sorry.
On the multi-purpose sports fields, is that, so the 120 to 130 range for all this, does that include the soccer complex, or is that a separate
no.
$90 million?
It assumes several soccer fields throughout the city, which could include that location. Okay. So, but not the entirety of the 24 in the stadium. We try to come up with this slide would anticipate that there would be multi-sports complex, I think Scott was just trying to indicate, throughout the city, which some could include, but maybe not the totality of those that are proposed in the youth sports complex, some portion of those in that location. The intent here was our demand for multi-sports fields is across the entire city. So this was just a way to say, how could we try to meet some of that need throughout the city in different areas, whether it's southeast, northeast, center. And we believe, too, that it's, well, soccer is certainly a big demand. We also have Little League baseball is important, and lacrosse and football, we have some demand there. So that's what this was intended to do. This would be, this our number, I don't remember how many multi-sports fields we talked about in that number.
On the order of 16.
16 or so, total. 18.
So. And then the shared use paths, is there an offset with MAG or SRP or ADOT or any other organization?
Maybe through MAG getting some of the,
it's the funding congestion called? Mitigation.
Yeah, CMAQ funds. So we would pursue those with each of those projects also. Yep.
So potentially that 120 to 130 million could be reduced?
No, that includes the assumption that we would have some of that, yeah.
Okay.
Then the last,
Yes, Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Brady, SRP will do some reimbursement on our shared use paths on their aesthetic fund. That's a new program that's just coming out. So I think that we can participate in some of that in the future.
Okay.
Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, we're already using aesthetics funds on our canals. In the slide I showed you with the some of the canal projects at the bottom, particularly the Eastern, that's almost all aesthetics funding on that canal.
They have a new program coming out that's going to start this year.
Great.
Okay.
So
great.
I should probably
bring it. It would stretch. Yeah, no, it'll stretch. Are you shared use paths?
So Mr. Thompson's answer him, there is some funding available.
Okay, great.
That's
and
great.
What we would propose, this is intended to be a framework conversation, we anticipate you'd want us to come back and provide more detail and more maybe breakout of those costs. We were trying to just give a context of just an allocation of dollars for these different categories, because really what eventually we need to do is kind of establish, you know, what's the total amount? What are we comfortable with? And then working in, just like, you know, you set a budget, and then we'll try to figure out what we can afford inside that budget. But today we just wanted to open the discussion, not necessarily try to pick. We are giving you, these are examples of projects, all of these are, of what we've heard from council members and some from staff that have indicated interest in these types of projects. So that's why we put them on here, and that's why we have a range. And all of this can be adjusted. It's just intended to open the discussion, making sure we're grabbing onto all the possibilities that council's been interested in. And then once we kind of set a budget and say, okay, but the number is going to be something, then we can start work on prioritizing and deciding what the limitations are.
Now, just to highlight the cultural side, as you've looked at this list, it includes the Southeast Library, as well as for arts and culture on the Lehigh Auditorium design, and then the IDEA Museum, the long-term plan for the IDEA Museum, and some design work associated with those improvements.
So, Mayor and Councilman Thompson, the library assumes no land acquisition. So it assumes a partnership with the school district.
That seems like a safe assumption at this point, right?
Yeah, but I just, that 120 to 130, made an assumption. So we know we would need to follow up on that, but I just want to make that clear. That's where that is. I think we're all on board with that, but I just want to make sure everybody understands. And the last two, as they said, I think those final two is intended to be, because we just didn't have really a knowledge to really be able to give a full amount. IDEA Museum has had some presentations, but there hasn't been detailed design completed on that project. I think we're going to be bringing up, we're going to invite the IDEA Museum. I don't think most of council's seen their proposal, so we'd like to bring that to council here pretty quickly so you could see that. But the intention here is would be funding just the design element only in this. So that's just something to think about.
And the same is true for the Lehigh Auditorium?
Yes. Okay. Well, and we put environmental in there. So it could include not just only design, but maybe some abatement would be included to begin the that's kind of how we did the federal building. You know, we kind of worked our way into it by, I guess, design, and then we did environmental abatement. That way, once we kind of had all that taken care of, it made it a lot easier for us to program it, or at least look at it and program it and design it. Now, that was done in the previous bonds. Now, with the federal building, what we're proposing is to do some minimum improvements to make it occupiable. It wouldn't be, I don't know what's the word, significantly programmed. It would just be able to have the public have access to it and use it, and then maybe over time, as we talk about other uses, we could program it. But it's, anyway, that's what the idea is.
Would that include trying to get rid of the restrictions that are currently on the building?
Well, we could explore that. That's kind of a legal issue. This was intended to try to fit inside of those restrictions, at least allowing the community to come and have use of the building for the purposes that are defined under that restrictions. But I don't know what it would take, Mel, Jim, to talk about that.
Mayor and Councilmember Glover, once we have a plan, we'd go back into the federal government and submit it to amend the plan that we currently have. We haven't done that because there's been some potential different plans, and so we don't want to have to do it multiple times. So once we have a specific plan that we know how we want to use it, we'd go forward, amend the plan. A number of the ideas that I've heard about, we would be successful with the federal government, but because of the amount of time it takes to do that, we'd like to do it once.
Mr. Thompson.
Chris, how much money, remember a couple of years ago we shifted, or maybe it was last year, we shifted the funds from the parks over to,
how much of that money we've assumed, we have today, Beth, we have about $4 million.
For the federal building?
In place today that we've been planning and using. And to complete it so that you could have public access to it, have receptions, have community gatherings. Nothing significantly programmed is another $3 million.
Three.
So it's not a lot. We're just so close and being able, and it's a pretty, I would invite the council to go tour the building. It's pretty amazing now that we've kind of pulled back a lot of the asbestos and stuff. And so for my community gathering location, for the additional $3 million, it would be a pretty nice amenity. Then we think once we open it up and have the community kind of be able to look into it, then we can have some further discussions about programming and what do we, you know, beyond just maybe receptions and community gatherings. We've talked about an indoor play space. We've had all kinds of different discussions, but we didn't think we were ready to go that far. But since we've committed so many dollars and spent so much time on this, and as we've peeled it back and opened it up, it's really impressed us as a great amenity for downtown. So,
Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Bray, remind me the restrictions of use on the building.
Oh, can I have the city attorney do that?
Mr. Smith.
You know, I there's a very specific plan that got adopted more than a decade ago, and it was for a very specific type of use, and I just can't remember what it was.
More like
it was,
a museum.
It was a museum type use.
Natural History Museum. Natural History Museum today has the basement.
Mm-hmm,
it's probably the most, it's kind of like those Raiders of Lost Ark movies in the basement of Smithsonian. That's the basement of our federal building. It has all these artifacts. Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say that. I guess people will go down there. It's really unique.
It's really our historical museums, our Museum of Natural History. They have storage down there. So there's some interesting things down there in the basement. But the building itself, it's a really cool building, interesting building. It needs a lot of the bones fixed. You know, we need mechanical, electrical, and there's some things we just need to do to get all the finishes back up to surface. So there are just some, basic things that need to be done before we can use the building for anything.
So as Mr. Brady mentioned, as you're considering these and looking at the various things, we wanted to give you some information as far as what the funding of these looks like. So the slide you're looking at now highlights the last three bond elections. Beth spoke to those as far as where we would fall within that today.
Excuse me, Mr. Thompson, go ahead.
One question. Chris, do we know how much of the bond debt for all these past GO bonds has been paid off?
Well, since these were just issued, and a lot of these were off, so this is the date of authorization. So that's when the voters would have approved it. And then usually those projects take, as we just mentioned, we're just finishing up the parks. We completed most of public safety. And so what happens is after they're authorized, then as the projects start coming online with design and construction, and again here, so that's November of 13, we're in April of 18. So they're phased in over time. And then every year, and the council just did this last week, sold or authorized the sale of additional bonds. And so as needed, we then sell the bonds. And so since these bonds were just most recently authorized and we've just put in authority to sell bonds, I don't know what the actual sell date is, but in the next few weeks, then it'll be about 20 years or so from then. So we haven't, from these, probably nothing, very little at all, but bonds that were sold previous to this, those are being paid down over time.
We also wanted to show you what the net impact would be on the property tax side. We gave you some increments there, $100, $200, and $300 million, what the cost, annual cost would be to a median homeowner.
So Mayor and Council, that nets out everything that we've talked about before, because there will be a reductions in the homeowner's cost as a result of new growth, new valuation increases, as well as available funds and that are available to pay down debt. And so we want to just make sure you understand this is a calculation based on the current $130 and 59 cents that a homeowner would pay. And so we've calculated the net difference with all those other things I just talked about. And that's the net number you get for $100 million versus $200 million. Make sure I'm saying this right? Correct? Okay. So the $200 million number would still be just over $40.76 a year for the average, for the medium homeowner. And thank you. And the city attorney, remind me, we've given you that calculation to show you how it's a backup slide. It was it's a spreadsheet. But we gave you the summary here, but you have the backup. In the backup, it shows how we calculated that.
So that's the bulk of the conversation. Just that last slide mentions that the proposed five-year CIP will be on the agenda for council consideration on May 21st.
And that's just the adopt, not this, what you've just saw, but the stuff that Beth covered earlier. This, again, is intended for a discussion. I think some of the discussion we'd like to hear from council, does it look like we're capturing, did we leave off something? Did we capture projects? Are there questions about any of the projects we've identified here? And then at some point, we need to kind of get comfortable with kind of the range, I think. If we're going to move forward, if that's the agreement of the council, if we could go back to that slide that had the $100 million, the $200 million, $300 million, I think that just kind of gives, kind of you can kind of see that scale. And if at some point it'd be helpful to get kind of an idea of where council felt comfortable. And remember, this is a cumulative number of all the authorizations that would be approved, whether it's in parks or whether it's in public safety, whatever it might be, the combination of all those would fall into this number. Let me also share with you, we believe, and I think we showed you the number for this year in streets, we believe that we could continue with the streets program as we've proposed probably for the next 2 years. It's going to make it tight, but we think we could wait and move forward with the street authorization and wait and for 2 years and do that with the utilities. So we would recommend that while we certainly see a lot of demand out there, we're proposing to do a lot of the design work on some of the critical projects that are sensitive to timing. We propose to do those now, but we would propose that maybe in 2 years we would hold the streets bond program with the utility question authorization. So that would be one option that would kind of help us push that question off for this coming year, if that's what council wants to do.
So we're not in, the need is not so urgent that we need to do the transportation bond.
We have funding, as we showed you in the earlier slide. We have a lot of work we can do now. A lot's in the design element, so that's good because it'll be shovel ready. And frankly, by doing that, sometimes we can leverage regional dollars or other dollars to come down and help accelerate those projects. But we didn't want to lose ground on that anyway, or timing on some of those projects. So they do need to be done in the next few years.
Great. Thank you. We do have a few blue cards on this agenda item. And so why don't we go ahead and hear those now, and then we can have the council discussion after maybe we've heard all of the input. The first, thank you very much, you guys, for the presentation. The first blue card is from Stephen Dennison. Mr. Dennison. Thank you for being here. You have 3 minutes. Appreciate your willingness to come and share your thoughts with us.
Yes, no, thank you, Mayor and Council, for allowing me to do that. I just wanted to come, as an individual, as a parent of three young boys that use the facilities such as this, as a coach of youth athletics and youth programs, as a professional involved within the hospitality and tourism industry, and as an individual running for council seat for District 3 this year. I express my appreciation for your efforts in what you do. I've been in those seats before for 10 years and understand what it takes to do what you're doing. A couple of quick questions that I had. I know Mesa Plays, the Visit Mesa numbers indicated $60 million. Today the slide was showing $90 million. My question is that for the offsites, that difference of $30 million, is that for the offsite improvements, or what's the difference showing there? Is that something you didn't answer?
Why don't you finish your 3 minutes, and then okay. That's certainly something that we'll address.
Yes, that's right. That's fine. From what I've seen, number-wise, again, positive revenue generation. I know always when you're looking at expenditures that continue to go up and you're looking for revenue sources, if this is an opportunity to be able to do that, then it's certainly something that I would like to see move forward onto the ballot to be able to have the residents of our great city decide whether it's something that they want to have or not. Beyond that, I appreciate your opportunity. I think it was Candace that indicated a lot of growth going out on the east side. That's where this is located, where obviously our residents would be able to take advantage of that. But even beyond that, just the economic impact of being able to bring individuals into our community for athletics, even conferences. Again, I know that that's somewhat hard at times to get conferences to come to our city because of the facilities that we don't have. Difficult at times to be able to make arrangements to get into our own convention center. Being able to try and book something out a year and a half, 2 years can be difficult. And so when we have something of this nature that would be able to add to that, that'd be a tremendous value to us, as well as obviously additional hotels and properties support businesses that would be able to come into it. So I just want to, again, express my hope that this does move forward as a ballot item. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dennison. Next is Tom Rhodes. Well, we'll address the numbers related to Mesa Plays, but let's do it at the end, because I know that would probably be the topic of some council.
Come on up. We're just going to move the computer, get the computer. Let's just turn it. Can you shut it off?
Yeah.
You get distracted by that.
No.
No, you're good. You're fine.
You have a minute left, Tom. Just kidding. Good
Thank
to see you,
my,
Tom.
My old friend.
Yeah.
And my lawyer and neighbor and Mr. Mayor, Council.
Good to see you. Welcome.
I'm here to represent a group of Mesa residents who primarily have to do with the Visit Mesa organization, but also very much active in as proponents for this particular project, which we call Mesa Plays. When Imagine Mesa published its report, the very first recommendation that they made was a multi-use outdoor-indoor facility for youth sports. That's what this is. The estimate, and these are very conservative estimates that come to us from Elliot Pollack, who is an economist in Phoenix and who does not have any skin in this game, is that about a half million visitors will come to Mesa for the purposes of using this particular facility. If the facility is used up to 50% of its capability, we estimate that it would generate about $1.2 million more than it costs. You've heard this morning presentations about police and fire and parks and rec, net users of tax dollars. This is a net generator of tax dollars, and we think it's to use a colloquialism, we think it's a swell idea. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate it. The third end of the cards I have is from Mark Garcia. Mark?
Morning, Mayor, Council. I think the card was put in on my behalf.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Was thinking I'd be here to answer any questions that you might have. Tom put it perfectly. We've been at this for over 4 years now. The best way I can describe this is it's not a park. This is an economic engine. I realize this will be part of a parks bond. But when you're bringing in 500,000 new visitors to a city that's really dependent on sales tax revenue just to meet its essential public services to its citizens, it would make sense to me that you'd want to invest in projects like this that bring in new revenue that can be a solution to some of those essential services and providing the funding for those essential public services. So we're really excited about it. We have a tremendous amount of client support for this, dozens and dozens and dozens of client support letters who have indicated to us that if you build this, we will come, and not just that we will come, but they've given us the value of their business. So we're really excited about it. We know it'll be a catalyst for other economic development projects. I know you've received letters from hotel developers who have suggested that if you build this, they will build hotels. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mark. I know we do have, there was a question raised earlier about the costs associated with this, and so maybe now is a good time for Beth to come up and explain those changing numbers.
Yes. So I think back in early 2016, Mesa Place presented some numbers on the order of $60 million. As the recession has ebbed, we've seen a substantial growth in construction costs. We are in a what I think of as more volatile cost market now than we've been in for a number of years, probably for 10 years. There are a lot of projects in the Valley driving that. Intel has a multi-billion dollar facility that's taking a lot of our skilled labor, and they're building a freeway around South Mountain right now that's taking all of our concrete crews, and we're struggling with not having adequate skilled labor. So those costs are very different than they were 2 years ago. The other thing to note is that the $90 million estimate includes the offsite improvements for streets, water, and sewer, which Mesa Place did not include in their estimates. And we sat down and worked very closely with them in generating estimates. Their independent estimator came up with $80 million. Our estimators came up with $85 million. And then when you add in the offsite improvements, it gets you up towards $90 million with the numbers. Those are kind of the changes that we've seen in the numbers.
Great. To that topic as well, I think questions have been asked about whether or not this project could be phased in certain increments. For example, we defer or delay the construction of the proposed field house, or we do less than the proposed number of fields. Do we have some ideas as to whether or not we could break this into pieces and what the cost would be if we did that?
I guess I would ask Mayor Mark Garcia maybe to answer that question. We have posed that question to Mark in our meetings, and I know there's a feeling regarding economic growth and the impact to the programs they might be able to bring in. I don't know.
Mark, do you want to respond
Mark
to that?
Mark wants to respond to that. Or
forgive me, Mayor, Council, the specific question was?
Phasing in, for example, if we were to defer or the field house, or if we were to, what is the viability of this project if we do less than the entire project at one time?
Well, certainly something is better than nothing. The fields with the two stadium uses would bring us about 70% of the total economic impact that we put forward through our studies.
Okay. And the field house is about $15 million?
About $15 million.
Is that, do you agree with those numbers?
Yeah, I think it's more like 20, maybe 25 from my memory is.
Okay. All right. Council, questions for Beth or Mark on this topic?
I have a question.
Yes, Mr. Whitaker.
Does this, I'm assuming we don't have the cash laying around to pay for this out of our checking account. Is that correct?
Not that I'm aware of.
So we're bonding it? And the life of those bonds will be how many years?
I believe those would be 20-year bonds. Years.
At what interest rate?
I think we've provided that information, too. So it's about, we use an estimate of 5%. It usually is much less than that. But that's what we, in the presumptions that we gave you and the impacts to the average homeowner, we use that 20-year and 5% assumptions.
So if we assume the $85 million number and we have to amortize that debt, with principal and interest, we're actually talking about a project that's going to cost around $135 million. Is that correct?
I don't know that we've done the calculation, so. Because we don't usually do it by project. We do it for the entire authorization, so.
Correct. So, Mayor and Councilmember Whitaker, we don't do financial costs based on project. We do them on the overall program. And so we did provide you those that information on going in $10 million increments. So a $10 million increment would be about $800,000 per year on debt service over 20 years.
Yeah, just want to clarify the actual cost.
Sure. No, and that makes sense. And that's, so your number's probably pretty close. We could go back and check, yeah.
Okay.
Because obviously it's more than just the principal amount. You're giving the principal and the accrued interest over the 20 years.
Yeah, well, I just think as a council, as we decide on this, that we should take the actual cost that it's going to cost the taxpayer, not just the principled amount without any assuming any interest if it's going to take 20 years at 5%.
Sure.
That's my only point.
Okay, sure.
Thank you.
And one way that could be calculated easily is to look at the slides that we just saw where it says if we authorize $10 million or $100 million, $200 million, $300 million in bond debt and the increase in the amount that each taxpayer would have to pay over that amount of time is included in the slides we just saw.
Right.
Mr. Freeman.
This is probably a question for Beth, if you want to play musical chairs again. So, there you go. So on a phased-in approach, like the mayor mentioned, could that increase our costs in building? Because I think as a contractor, if you already have infrastructure in place, you got to go in and tear it up and then build something. I think our costs would go up a little higher. So maybe give your expertise.
Mayor, Councilmember Freeman, yes is the short answer. But we face projects all the time. We typically try to design them so we don't remove and tear things out, which helps. What you do see an increase in cost is it's generally cheaper to use. There's an economy of scale with doing a very large project because you mobilize the contractor in once, they're there, they can get an economy of scale. So that's primarily where your savings are, is in that kind of work. Although, you know, it just depends on where the economy is with construction prices, too, I'll tell you that.
Well, and Mayor and Council, what we would, if we were to the decision to phase it in, and we, again, as Beth said, we've done this on large projects because we just, in order to do a project of this magnitude in just one part of the city creates a challenge for us sometimes fiscally in order to be able to spread projects around the city. I mean, I think we all think that we appreciate the effort that's gone into master plan to the concepts of this whole complex. And I think if we were to phase it in, it would be in this inside of that context. And so the idea is you would keep that master plan intact, maybe even do a little further design work on that so that whatever phase we would do, the idea was to be able to do it so that it fits inside of the ultimate plan that's already been developed, and then over time then you would build it out and maybe eventually you'd have all the component pieces. But it's the difficulty, as you see the numbers, is just the pressure of having to make choices about one very large project, or as you saw
for $70 million, less than $80 million. We did over nearly 50 parks projects across the entire city in the last bond program. And that's where we're challenged with. It's, you know, we'd love to do all the projects here, and it's just kind of, we kind of get into the squeeze of what is reasonable to expect from our homeowners, what they would pay. And so we've kind of fallen around that $200 million number, and to see if that's even reasonable. That would still be a big lift for Mesa. We showed you the numbers from previous bond packages. And so it's, you know, it's about in that range, a little bit higher. So that's how we would evaluate. If we phase this in, the anticipation is we would try to do it inside of the current master plan so that when we came back into additional phases, we wouldn't be tearing anything out. We would just be adding on to what was already in place.
Well, I do know material costs are going up.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, and of course, future construction costs and labor costs will be impacted. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just trying to hold it below 85 million.
Okay.
Councilmember Heredia.
Yeah, maybe Mark, you said economic engine for the city. Could you go into the details, short-term and long-term benefits potentially for this complex?
Mayor, Councilmember Heredia, sure. I think we mentioned that on an annual basis, this project would bring in, if booked at full capacity, over 500,000 visitors a year, representing about $444 million in annual economic impact. Those are with inducements and multipliers, but the direct expenditures from those visitors would be about $202 million just in Mesa alone. And then when you consider some of the slippage that will occur, because we won't be able to capture all of the business in Mesa alone, primarily because we don't have the hotel inventory for some of the really big project or very big tournaments that we would be booking, you can factor another $30 to $35 million that would bleed into our neighboring communities. When you factor annual operations and maintenance up against these tax revenues that would be coming into the city of Mesa coffers, if booked at full capacity, after paying annual operations and maintenance costs, you'd still be looking at over $4 million in net revenue to the city of Mesa. And even in a dire situation, suggesting that, for example, it would be sitting empty 50% of the weekends out of the year, even after paying operations and maintenance, you're almost still $1 million in the black that would be able to go to the general fund, which the city could choose to spend however it wishes. Have I answered your question adequately? Thank you.
Does that include the debt service payment?
That does not include the debt service payment.
Which would be how much?
Well, it would depend on the interest rate and what that final figure is. But certainly that $4 million annually, if we booked at full capacity, which, by the way, when I say booked at 100% capacity, that's really at 80%, because our economic impact analysis has already taken away 20% of business that would bleed into the other community. But even at that $4 million, for example, Councilmember Whitaker, could be put towards debt service.
Council, before we have maybe some more discussion, any additional questions for these folks? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. My take on this is, the topic we're discussing now is whether or not we go forward with proposing to the public various bond packages. The proposal has been that we could and certainly use a transportation bond, although perhaps as our good city manager said earlier, we've got plenty to do right now in terms of planning, and we could defer that bond package for another 2 years on the transportation, but more pressing is public safety and parks. I personally think we need, there's not a lot of debate, I think, about the need and the wisdom in going forward with the public safety bond, $85 million for the things that have been identified in the presentation. To me, seems like, yes, we do that. Mr. Freeman.
Mr. Bray, what are our fixed costs for this election for the bonding? Is there any costs involved?
Yes, as far as the election itself?
Yeah, if go through the election process.
I'll defer to the clerk.
The cost of the election for the adding a bond question to the ballot wouldn't add appreciably to the cost of the overall election. It's just one more item on a on a ballot, so it doesn't add a great deal.
So we, I guess, put together the language for the bond and then mm-hmm. give it to you and it goes to the ballot?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Thank you. I don't know. I have to ask.
Yeah, the election is already occurring. This would not create an election that's not already happening. So that cost, that's a fixed cost. And if we add one more item to the ballot, it doesn't generate an expense. Okay. So I'm in favor of going forward with the public safety. The debate that we need to figure out is the parks bond. What does it look like? How big is it? Does it include all of Mesa Plays? Does it include part of Mesa Plays? Is Mesa Plays a separate question? Because as has been indicated, it's kind of apples and oranges. It's, yes, it's a park, but it's really an economic development project. Our local kids will get access to that park, but a lot of it is going to be used for out-of-state tournaments that are come in and for the purpose of generating hotel rooms, nights, and restaurant stays. And it's not, its primary focus is not providing parks and rec experience for our kids, but it's more of an economic development tool, which is great. I mean, look at Sloan Park during the month of March. I sit there and I go, this is great, but I wish that this was happening more than the month of March. So this is an opportunity to participate in sports tourism and help our economy 12 months out of the year by bringing in youth sports tournaments. So the charts that we've seen, we are going to exhaust our voters' willingness to pay for some of these things. We can't do everything, obviously. But it seems like my level of comfort is probably at the $200 million mark. So I think if we have an $85 million public, which the annual fiscal impact to our property owners is $40 a year. So we would have to go out to the Mesa taxpayers and say we're proposing to increase your secondary property tax by $40 a year to pay for these projects, to have a more robust park system in our city and to have the equipment that we need for our public safety personnel. And I think that's a reasonable proposal. Going much more than that, I think we're going to exhaust their willingness to increase their property taxes. So in my mind, I think we need to fit all the things that we want inside of that number. If we have 85 for public safety, you know, that gives us 120-ish to work on parks. And we have, if we do the full Mesa Plays at 90, and we do the full proposal, you know, 120 and 130 for parks, that's obviously bigger than
that's more than that pie.
So I think we're going to have to get down to the difficult task of prioritizing what's going to be on the parks ballot. And I'm not suggesting that we do that today. I think that's something that's going to require a more thoughtful approach. I'm anxious to hear from Mr. Hirschberg and others if we have to prioritize Mesa Parks, what's the most important parks that we have? Where do we get the biggest bang for the buck? I'm interested in hearing from them what he thinks his priorities are. Mr. Thompson.
Dan, when do you need to know for the ballot initiatives?
July 2nd, the council meeting on July 2nd would be the last day you could place items.
So, I'm sorry, additional...
Yeah, no, we didn't. Yeah, this was not intended to make decisions today.
Mr. Glover.
Thank you, Mayor. So, Mr. Brady, if you could have your staff go back and kind of price out some of the things that are on the parks and rec and culture side, that way we can have a better number or a better idea of what number can fit in.
And I heard from the mayor. Thank you, Councilmember Glover. We'll maybe have Parks Department and some of the other folks give a little more detailed, specific descriptions of when we say soccer, like how many and kind of where they might be, or the multi-purpose field. Same thing with the parks and the shared use pass. Maybe we'll bring some more descriptions and maybe, like you said, some unit cost for the different fields that are being proposed.
I'd even include for the Mesa Place Sports Complex how much the field house is going to cost, because there was a little bit of disagreement, and then how much the offsite.
Okay, we can do that.
Will cost as well.
We can do that.
I think another idea worth considering, and I'll throw this out, that we have a distinguished group of supporters in here today from Mesa Place. Another idea that we ought to think about is maybe if this is a good idea, that standing alone, are the voters of Mesa, much like they approved the Cubs stadium a few years ago, would see that the economic impact of that is you know, the math that Mark just shared with us is persuasive, and that they would want to fund that fully. So another idea, I'm not necessarily endorsing this, but I think we ought to think about it, is let's put Mesa Park, Mesa Plays on the ballot as a standalone question and fully funded. That way the Mesa Parks or the Mesa Plays advocates could make the case to the voters that if you vote for this, there's an economic benefit that's going to come back to the city that will more than pay for the cost. So that, I think that's another option that is worthy of discussion.
And Mayor, I think when we come back next time, and I think we need to clarify with council some discussions we've had previously when we went around with this project, that at some point when we include a stadium or some portion of the sports complex, it may trigger the 613 charter vote also. So that would add another measure on the ballot. We also had previously discussed whether it's a guaranteed of revenues, because the biggest concern I think we have from an economic impact is direct revenues that would actually come to the general fund, and incrementally can we really rely upon those? And we had talked about in the past also proposing a bed tax increase to help either support the debt service or to help cover the additional maintenance costs for these facilities. So maybe that's something we can have a discussion when we come back. So
what's a 613 charter vote?
Mayor and Council, this section 613 is the section that was added by the voters about 10 years ago, and it was in response. Phoenix also has a similar provision, and it was to one of the professional football stadiums. And the requirement, and I don't want to read it, but it says basically if the city spends more than $1.5 million for a stadium, and there's a few other words there too, not just a stadium, sports complex and so forth, that you have to go for a vote. And we've done this on a number of cases. We've done it for the Cubs. It was also done for Waveyard, I believe. And so we've had a couple 613 votes. And so we talked about this 2 years ago, before you joined council, Councilmember Whitaker, that this would be a section 613 vote for this project, along with also the bed tax increase. So it's actually three separate votes for the election.
Okay. I just want to make one other comment. I agree with John. I think that it should be a fully funded project, and we should create a separate line item for it and let the voters decide how they want to handle this. The cost sounds much like the ASU building in the same ballpark, and the economic impact generation sounds very similar as well. So I say we let the voters decide.
I'm not ready to say I'm endorsing the idea of putting it as a separate measure, but I think it's worth consideration. I think we need to have one or two more meetings like this where we talk about it. And to Mr. Brady's point, I think also because this is an economic development project that is tied to tourism, the idea of funding it through an increase in the bed tax makes perfect sense. So we can't generate enough through that to pay for it fully, but I think it ought to be a part of the equation. And so that, again, that'll be the topic of future discussion. So, Mr. Brady, if you could please come back to us. And like I said, I'm interested in hearing from Mr. Hirschberg, maybe the Parks Board. I mean, I need some help in understanding how we prioritize our parks needs.
That. Great. We will we'll wrap up the budget that we're underway discussing. We've got one more presentation today. Get that, kind of get that wrapped up with council, and get the sales tax resolution on your council agenda. And so I anticipate later in May, May through June, we would have these discussions. So, okay.
Thank you, council. Any additional comments on this one? Thank you. The next item on our agenda is item 1D, hear a presentation and provide direction on the Development Services Department budget. Welcome, Ms. Blanca.
Thank you. Morning, Mayor and Council. My name is Christine Zalanka. I'm the Development Services Department Director. I have with me today Chase Carlisle. He's our Senior Fiscal Analyst for the department. I also have the rest of the management team with me, so if you have specific discussion or questions, I can bring them up. I know it's been a somewhat long morning, so I'm going to make this relatively quick. The mission of the department is really to use professional staff to make sure that we have a community that's well planned, maintained, and work with our development community into the future.
I want to make sure your backup is
coming right here in the front row. Let me just take this opportunity to introduce him. John Wesley, you well know, is the planning director. Beth Hughes Arnellis is our deputy director over development planning and permit techs. And the newest addition to our department we're very excited to introduce is Lieutenant Ryan Russell. He will is gradually coming over to us, mostly on Tuesday mornings after night shift. He'll be with us the beginning of May, and we'll take over as the code administrator. John Sheffer is maybe right back there. He's our newly minted building official. He's been with us now for a while. He is over all of the plan review and permitting areas, and Angelica is my right-hand person, special projects, does everything that I can't quite get to. Quick organizational overview of the department. There we go. We have special projects, as I just said. All of the fiscal management of the department has been consolidated under our Chase with our administrative staff and fiscal group. In the past, it was a little bit split up between the different areas, but it's all been consolidated in one area. John Wesley is over the land entitlement, primarily planning and zoning. You see him regularly. Development planning, that group really is the point focus for the city with the other infrastructure departments. On new development or redevelopment, we do a lot of work representing water, transportation, solid waste, those kinds of things to make sure the development is done in conformance with a well-planned community and with city codes. Plan review and building inspections, that's actually the work of the department of reviewing plans for, again, new development or redevelopment, and then actually conducting the inspections. Code enforcement is an area that we're going to talk about, and again, Lieutenant Russell will be taking over those responsibilities. Challenges and opportunities, Candace talked about this at the first meeting on the budget kickoff. Our biggest opportunity and challenge is development activity in the city of Mesa. I think as you all know, we continue to see a significant and sustained increase in primarily residential development activity, but also some commercial. A couple of things that we've talked to you about, but just to remind you, we are updating a number of our codes. The zoning code, you've heard John and Angelica talk to you about the sign code. It's very outdated. It's been out there for a while. You've had a couple of presentations. They've been back with our development community, the sign associations. We anticipate that they will be back actually before the summer break to have a final proposed sign ordinance for you to consider. Our building codes, we are currently on the 2006 version of the international codes. That's the electrical, mechanical, structural, plumbing. John Sheffer is taking the lead on updating all of those codes. Those will be towards the end of 2018 when you'll see those. And we've got committees and our development community working with us on that. We're looking at going to the 2018 code, which is the most current. We're also looking at making minor revisions to the building maintenance code. That's our nuisance code, and that's primarily the code enforcement piece of it. And then another thing that councils, I'm sorry, was there a question?
Yes, Mr. Thompson, thank you.
Thank you. Christine, on the updating to the 2018 codes, can you make sure that you work with Energy Services and the other departments that will be impacted? Because I know from the natural gas industry, when they, a lot of cities went from the 2008 to the 2012 codes, I believe, there was a part in there that required attics to be conditioned spaces.
Right.
And since a lot of your house lines for your natural gas run through your attic, you end up with an enclosed space that potentially could have a natural gas leak and mm-hmm. could get that perfect combination where you end up with combustible atmosphere. So I want to make sure that It's not going to impact our energy services, what our folks do, but also the builders as well.
Right, and the energy code was adopted more recently, but that's absolutely part of the process of working not only with our stakeholder community on the outside, but certainly also the affected internal departments to make sure that everybody is in agreement on what those requirements are. We do have the ability within the international codes to adopt what we call local amendments. So if it's determined that there are particular pieces of an international code that don't really work for the city of Mesa, we currently have a number of those in our city code. We're trying to minimize that because certainly we hear a strong cry for consistency across the valley from the development community, but you're absolutely right, that's what we'll be doing. Okay. The other codes that we're or guidelines also that we were authorized to start working on last year at your request, adaptive reuse of existing buildings. We've had a couple of excellent examples of that. Oftentimes the older buildings really require some special attention as to what the requirements are under the current code. So we've got a consultant working on putting together guidelines on that. Also, design guidelines. Councilmember Thompson has been a strong advocate of us finally getting those to you, and we are working on that. Also, our subdivision regulations, which really goes to the infrastructure piece. How is a properly designed subdivision developed? What are the infrastructure needs to make sure that that community lives well into the future? The subdivision regulations are approximately 20 years old, so we're working on updating those also. You'll be seeing all of that coming to you again before the end of the calendar year. Proactive code enforcement is something we're going to be talking about in just a minute, and then also historic preservation. Just to give you an idea of our growth that we've been seeing over the last several years, and this goes back to 2013, the bars on the bottom are broken out by the areas of activity within the department. You can see a very consistent increase in the expenses, and that's because of the cost of providing services. What we've been doing over the last several years, we use a combination of full-time staff and fill in the unmet need with temporary services, and we're really at a point where we're recommending some changes to that. The green line at the top is our revenues that we bring in associated with the services we provide. The delta between the expenses and the revenues, that's the contribution to the general fund. This slide shows you just a snapshot, and you see this. I think most of your council assistants get this information every month. To put it in perspective, in March, Mesa was second only to Phoenix in the number of residential permits issued. We were 2 residential permits less than Phoenix, so that just gives you an indication of the level of residential growth. What this slide shows, the sort of salmon colored, is residential, which clearly is the leading driver. The blue bar on the bottom is the commercial activity. That continues to increase, but at a slower rate. And based on the amount of land that we know is available, primarily in Southeast Mesa, a little bit more Northeast Mesa, and we're also seeing some Center City major projects, we anticipate that that level of residential growth is going to continue for the next several years. The next slide here, obviously, once somebody gets their plans approved, they start building. It really is a stress on our building inspectors that are out there making sure the houses are constructed properly and safely. We are currently, with the number of building inspectors we have, over 25 inspections per inspector per day. That number is just too high to make sure that we're doing quality inspections. So we're looking to make some recommendations on additional conversion of temporary employees into full-time equivalents. We're, again, being very conservative on what we're requesting for full-time equivalents. Summarizing that, it's a total of 6 FTEs directly in response to development activity. That includes 1 permit tech, 2. These are the folks that are really the face of the city. They log in the plans, log out the plans, and are there to help our developers get through the process. Building plans examiner, 1 civil plans examiner. Again, those are the folks that look at the infrastructure piece. 2 additional building inspectors. Again, that number of 25 inspections per inspector today is per day is just way too high. And then one administrative assistant. As you all know, we have gone to an electronic permitting system. All of our permits are issued electronically. All of our plans come in electronically. But we're still seeing a significant number of folks coming in physically and needing additional help, whether it's figuring out how to get their plans submitted electronically, sitting down talking with a planner to figure out what their land use issues are. So we really do need that permanent position at the front desk to help our customers. Some of the performance metrics that we look at all the time, new planning cases per month, the new residential and non-residential permits. And that's actually, we report that out directly every month to the Home Builders Association of Central Arizona, and they publish a spreadsheet every month comparing all of the cities throughout the valley. Average number of inspections, number of active code cases per officer in the code compliance area, and then also percentage of cases that are closed voluntarily. The two starred metrics there are currently in the open data portal, and you've been hearing from Candace and others about the transition to Socrata. The other metrics are in our internal MesaStat databases, and those are being migrated over to the open data portal. There's three new programs that we have been requested to bring forward: small business assistance, proactive code enforcement, and then also historic preservation. The small business assistance, that's something that we already do. When we have someone that comes in, if they know to come in, that we can bring a planner up and say, okay, this is, you're entitled, you got the right zoning on this particular property, or this is what you need to do from a building code to make sure you can use it for a music venue when it maybe used to be a restaurant or something. We also have folks that can help them actually out in the field with the inspections and through code compliance. What we've determined, though, is that we could do a much better job of making those services known through social media, through our website, that we would have a position dedicated to help those small businesses through the process of actually developing and occupying their business, and they'd have one central point of contact, everything from the very beginning, geez, this is where I think I want to go, this is where I want to put my business, to the final certificate of occupancy when they get their business up and moving. Code enforcement has been one of our major challenges. We currently have 9 full-time code officers, 1 temp, and we have the entire city split into 10 service areas, basically. These are where each individual code officer works. You can see that even in West and Central Mesa, those are large areas for one code officer to do anything other than really respond to complaints. There's been a request that actually part of it came up through Imagine Mesa to do a better job on proactive enforcement for some of the areas of the city that really could use some additional attention. Our proposal is that we add 4 code officers. That would reduce the work area that each of them has. It would allow for more proactive inspections. One of the big questions that's come up with the sign code is that we have had requests from our residents to do a better job on taking care of the sign clutter. A lot of that is the temporary signs, the banners, the feather flags, some of those kinds of things that have just cluttered our neighborhoods. And quite frankly, our code officers have just not had an opportunity. They don't have the time to deal with those temporary signs. A lot of that is going to the business owner, explaining what the problem is, explaining what the regulations are. So this would allow us to do a better job of actually enforcing the primarily temporary signs. We're proposing a new proactive project that would be an interdepartmental collaborative effort involving the code enforcement group, but in compliance or in collaboration with the police department. We do a lot of work with the fire department, with fire prevention, and then other departments as necessary, solid waste, neighborhood outreach, so that we have a group that they identify where challenged areas of the cities, whether it's a particular neighborhood, a particular alley, an industrial or a commercial complex, where we would identify those probably on a quarterly basis. We would have that collaborative group work with those building owners, with the focus on outreach and education, voluntary compliance, and would only move into enforcement if we can't get the areas cleaned up. The other issue that we've talked about is the bandit signs that litter the area, usually right next to the curb. They show up on the weekends, on Monday mornings. We've got $25,000 proposed in the budget to deal with picking up those bandit signs. The last program that I wanted to talk about is historic preservation. We actually had a presentation by the Historic Preservation Board Chair to the Sustainability and Transportation Subcommittee, I think about 6 weeks ago, and they have been very proactive in recommending more effort and more resources for historic preservation. The city has not had a historic preservation officer since approximately 2009, so we've really, it's been a pretty de minimis operation. The HP board recommended a full-time position. The SAT unanimously endorsed that concept. What that would allow us to do, and that historic preservation officer, is do more proactive work, reaching out to neighborhoods. We have a few existing historic neighborhoods that have been designated. We have a number of neighborhoods that post-World War II neighborhoods around the city that could potentially meet the historic definition, but that requires a lot of public outreach, a lot of just sort of one-on-one work with the neighborhoods. Certificates of appropriateness are issued for facilities within a historic designated district. That takes a fair amount of work. If you want to come in and add a skylight to one of your rooms, it takes a lot of work to make sure that you don't adversely affect the quality of your home, as in the context with that historic neighborhood. There's also a focus on preserving neon signs, and there's been some work on taking those historic neon signs down, and currently they're being stored for hopefully eventually some kind of a more public opportunity to view those. The SAT actually asked us to develop metrics for historic preservation. Three that John Wesley came up with is the number of neighborhood education events that are conducted, the average number of days to approve the certificate of appropriateness, and the number of districts or landmarks researched per quarter.
Excuse me, Mr. Thompson.
One of the things that came up in our SAT meeting was do we really need a full-time, or do we want to contract that position out? Because I think one of the issues, I think when we asked John, Mr. Wesley, about this, you don't have the support admin right now to support that preservation officer. So you'd have to add, you know, two, three, maybe four positions to that that would report to that preservation officer, just to keep up with the day-to-day function and tasks that they're assigned with. And so I think one thing we should look at really is do we want to contract that position out to professionals that have the staff that can do that for the city of Mesa versus taking on more?
Yeah, we followed up with that with the budget office. You asked that specific question, the cost of a full-time equivalent position versus consulting or a contract. We have $98,000, approximately $100,000 in the budget that covers an FTE. When talking to the budget office, they project a 2.5% increase per year. We would expect to see a very similar, if not greater, level of inflation for consultant work on it, because they charge on an hourly basis. We are not asking for any additional administrative staff. Chase's group provides administrative support to the department. Having that full-time officer, they would actually be able to do an awful lot more than we can currently do with our having an outside consultant.
Well, and I guess my concern is if the historic preservation piece is, you know, because as our city's getting older and older, we're adding more and more to that position. And so without having a full staff to complement the position to keep up with the day-to-day tasks, we end up, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul. We're taking, you know, folks from Chase's group and inundating them with more work to do the preservation versus what they're normally tasked to do. And so my point is that if the comparable to outsource that to a contractor is $98,000 and they have the support staff to do it, then why wouldn't we look at that? Because it would be an overall, to me, it would be an overall cost savings.
So,
and because, I mean, you're already understaffed with the number of permits that are coming through, second to Phoenix in the month of March. Right. How much more can your individuals or your staff take on before they're overloaded and we have to add more admin?
So I think, Mayor and Council, I think the Council was bringing up a model that maybe we haven't thought about that is, and it has some merit. So today, when currently we contract out some of this work. I think what you're actually suggesting is maybe even almost a little bit different model than the way we do it today, where as opposed to using the word contract, we could hire consultants, and a consultant usually implies more the entirety of the they bring all their support, right? So we could, I'm just throwing this out, in theory, we could, instead of adding a position, we could add additional dollars to have consultants go do some of these neighborhood designation areas. Like we've done sometimes on zoning where we'll bring, like we're doing today in the Interloop, where we bring in a consulting group. So it's not necessarily someone we're paying by contract who kind of is sitting there with the staff, but more of a consultant and give them a specific task of these. So that is an option. I mean, I'm just making sure. I think that's a distinction from what we have today, where they're kind of there to take the work that comes through the door, right, John? Or maybe am I missing that? But I can see the difference between a consultant and maybe just having contract labor.
Mayor, Councilmember Thompson, just a little bit of quick background. I have to go back and do a little bit more study on it. But a couple of years ago when we did go through the process to hire the current consultant to help us with our process, for the budget dollars that we had, we were able to get a person working part-time, and it's a person. It doesn't have a staff working behind her. The budget proposals or the RFPs we got back at the time with regard to that, those companies that really were the bigger companies were significantly more in terms of cost. And so I think if we are getting those bigger companies, we're again probably paying a much bigger cost. As far as the model, how we've used the consultant currently, we have used the consultant primarily to do those things that staff couldn't do. So the work that comes in the door has still been the staff work to handle, and the consultant has been trying to help move forward some of the historic districts and some of those things. When we have a consultant, there's still that staff responsibility to manage that consultant. That would still impact somebody. By having the internal staff person really full-time dedicated to it, I think would be the more cost-effective way to go, but we're certainly glad to go back and take another.
Right. Well, and I guess my point being is that if you have a contractor, you have one person with no staff, they bring nothing more than their knowledge to the table. Whereas if you go out to a consultant usually has a firm, they have the admin staff, they have the professional, and so you're paying for that. I would rather pay a little bit more to ensure that we're accomplishing the task at hand of historic preservation versus hiring a full-time person and then at some future date have to hire two, three, four more admin people to support that because your guys are overloaded and overburdened. So I would rather the whole thing shift to an outside consultant, and that firm does all of our historic preservation.
Okay. Well, let's do this. Can we bring back a model, what that would look like, and just have that discussion maybe in the next week or two?
Sure.
So, yeah, that's certainly a different model we can look at. So that's and I guess there is some advantage that then you have more of a firm, and John's right, I'll pay a little more, but then you get expertise in a variety of different areas. So there are some advantages maybe because you get different perspectives. Instead of just hiring an individual with one perspective, you can get multiple perspectives, and certainly in historic preservation, there's a lot of different views on how that should be accomplished. And maybe having more of a firm of consultants that can come and give us a range of ideas, that may be helpful also. Yeah. So let's see what those possibilities are and come back and visit about that.
Excuse me, Mr. Freeman.
Christine and John, is there value having our own HPO to navigate the different departments in the city? And how are you doing it today? I mean, John's our HPO, correct?
Councilmember Freeman, I was the HPO until last August when I became the zoning administrator and Kim Steadman became the historic preservation officer. Okay. That has been one of our concerns, and it's certainly something we could look at and see how we would navigate it. But one of our concerns with that site consultant is that ability to integrate easily with the other departments as things come up versus having somebody in staff who has those closer working relationships.
Well, one of my thoughts is with all the proposed downtown development, redevelopment that's coming down, I know the HPO person will be very busy, whoever it is.
Right.
And let alone the standing neighborhoods, the historic neighborhoods. So we have to somehow expedite that process for the redevelopment components that will affect older buildings and the districts that are set apart or set aside for historic preservation. So I'm trying to weigh what Kevin has said and what you've said, because maybe there's a hybrid in this. I don't know.
Those are very good points.
Because I think what you're doing now is, whether it's Kim or previously yourself, you get the information, you use staff, you're pulling staff, probably help support you, get the job done, then you go back doing your related responsibilities. So what you're advocating is creating one specific position for that, and then probably using support staff as needed as the HPO. But then Kevin's advocating, maybe paying a consulting firm, maybe a little bit more money with that support staff already. So there may be value to separate.
I think we need to look at the different models and we can.
And I like to see the costs involved. I mean, if they're charging by the hour, based on the hours you put in today, I think it's going to ramp up.
Yeah, and this is one of those items where we could set some dollars aside without making the final, right now, the determination of what we're going to do, and then give us time to kind of bring this back to council and have a discussion. I think what we're really, maybe let's put the placeholder in the budget and then keep working on this concept, because I think it's very interesting, and we could spend more time finding out what kind of consultants are available, what kind of level of work could they do, and how does that balance out with actually having somebody here on the full time or even just here walking things through. So we can explore all those options.
Mr. Whitaker.
I don't think technology can completely replace this full-time position, but what I'd love to see from staff is if you guys could work with the City Link, it's called the City Link app, and just see what different parts of the historic preservation can be integrated into the app for more streamlined. That way we're allowing technology to be more efficient than waiting for some form of human interaction. And don't get me wrong, I'm not in your shoes. I don't know what pieces of that can or can't be, but I would only ask that you guys look at it from that perspective and see if there is anything that you can offload into the app to help save some of those hours, whether it's a consultant or an FTE that we go with.
Yeah, I guess the thing that probably occurs to me, we just recently added code compliance as a specific pull-down item on that. We could certainly do that with historic preservation. Maybe that would, kind of be the start for a neighborhood if they wanted to make an inquiry, hey, what do I do about getting my neighborhood established as a historic preservation. Certainly there is a lot of detail that goes into it, but that would certainly be an excellent place to give folks the opportunity to get started, I would think.
Yeah, and again, I'm not here to tell you that you're doing anything inefficiently. I'm only asking that you guys look into some of those options. I do know that they have technology now where it uses like artificial intelligence. They're called like chat bots, where people can submit questions and the bot will actually interpret the question, almost like a frequently asked questions, but it's more of an interaction type of thing. So I just think some things like that, if we're looking at the technology side, could be really helpful in offloading some of the hours that would be necessary for a contractor or a full-time employee. So.
Okay, we'll look into that certainly.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I do. Yes, Mr. Freeman.
I just want you, I support an HPO of some type.
Okay. Yes, sir.
However it turns out, I support having your own historic preservation officer.
Which we do today.
I know, but that takes away from staff time. That's
just the option. Is we have one designated, but there's a lot of work they can't do. So maybe we currently have a historic preservation officer designated who is a staff member, but then we also have a contractor
Correct.
Who's providing supplemental work. So.
I think what I hear, though, is we're going to go look at taking all of this and seeing what more, if we did a consultant more type, a firm, what work could they could do. We would always still have an historic preservation officer designated somewhere in the city as a city staff person, for sure. So we'll just, I think there's still more discussion. We'll bring back some options.
Sure. Mr. Reddy.
Yep. I also support the idea to add support for the HPO piece of this. My question on the code compliance, is there a thought on reducing the size with four additional code compliance officers, reducing the size of the territories, or
yes.
How do you plan to deploy these additional officers?
And Ryan can certainly come up if you'd like to. Yes, the idea is absolutely that we would reduce the size of the areas that each code officer is working in, which again would give them the opportunity to spend more time in each area, do more of the proactive work, and certainly having a smaller area, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, they're going to be a lot more familiar with it and can be more responsive and do more outreach to the residents.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Thank you. I would say that we would base those size of those geographic areas based on the amount of workload that is in each area. There's obviously certain geographic areas that are going to generate more of a workload, so we want that smaller area for that code officer. If that answers your question.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thank you very much. Christine, given that we're issuing approximately the same number of building permits as Phoenix, I assume we have approximately the same staff number.
That would not be a correct assumption,
well,
sir.
No, we don't, because ours are two times better, so we only need half as many.
At least twice is good. Now, if we do citywide or cross-city comparisons, which we do periodically, Mesa is very lean but very good.
Okay.
So we should be paying them.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go.
That's what I've heard. Actually, a lot
told
of people.
You that,
some of whom, some of whom don't even work for the city of Mesa. Yeah. So, thank you very much. Congratulations. You really, for you and your team, we know that you're doing a lot. The tremendous growth pressure that we're experiencing as a community is borne primarily by your department. So thank you for stepping up and doing such a great job.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments, Council? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks very much.
The next item on our agenda, item two, is approval of minutes from an executive session. Is there a motion to that effect? Thank you, Mr. Glover and Mr. Thompson. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. The next is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of boards and committees. Thank you, Mr. Freeman and Mr. Glover. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Next is to hear reports on meetings and conferences attended. Council, anything you'd like to share? Mr. Thompson.
Let everyone know you and I helped break ground yesterday with Christine as well on CMC's 64,000 square foot expansion to do spooled rebar. They are the first steel mill in the U.S., and CMC Arizona will be the first steel mill on the West Coast to provide spooled rebar. It's something that's being used right now in Europe, and so they're transitioning that to the U.S., and so many more future successes for CMC right here on our industrial corridor on Germain.
Thank you. I agree. That was a very impressive expansion. Mr. Freeman.
Several of us attended the East Valley Hispanic Chamber meeting yesterday, and it was very informative. Skybridge, they talked about. And I learned a lot there, and I appreciate the leadership, Councilmember Thompson and Vice Mayor Luna. And I learned a lot, so... Thank you for letting me go. Pardon?
It was a warm welcome.
It was.
Thank you. Anything else, Council? Mr. Brady, do we need to know about the schedule?
Well, this Saturday from 11 to 2, Councilman Reddy is hosting the Spring Blast at Rose Aquatic Center. There'll be hot dogs and hamburgers and open swim and flow rider rides. So that should be a lot of fun. And then we'll be meeting again next Thursday, May 3rd at 7:30. Thank you.
Thank you. Speaking of schedule, Mr. Brady, it's probably good to just share some information with the public about the city resources that are being made available during the Red for Ed walkout. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yes, I'm going to ask
and give her time and let Carrie. Oh, Mark. Mark's here. Let me delegate it.
Yeah, no, Curly and Mark.
He can actually give
up.
You an update about some
yeah,
of the
how many kids he's
yeah. actually
I think the
up.
Latest I got was at 8 o'clock, so I don't know if you have any new numbers,
yeah,
we
got
but
a
we
few
do.
Updates.
Okay, we do have 4 recreational facilities, city facilities that are currently open today and tomorrow. So I'll let you go through kind of their locations and how many kids we have so far.
Yes.
We weren't sure how many, so we got some.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Council. We have been working with Mesa Public Schools, and they've worked with the Mesa Education Association to assist us with getting some volunteers at the Jefferson Recreation Center, Webster Recreation Center, Broadway Recreation Center, and the Eagles Community Center. And they teachers are assisting us with staffing it through their normal school day, whatever that release time is, 2:40 or 3:15. Right around there. And then after that, city staff, along with the Explorer program staff from Mesa Public Schools, will continue to run programs until 5:30 this evening. So we started at 7:30, and we were up to largest site was Jefferson. We had 75 the last report I got. We were at about 30 at Eagles, 50 at Webster, and right around 25 at Broadway. Mesa Food and Nutrition has already provided breakfast at 8:30 this morning. They'll also be coming in with lunch later this afternoon. And then Jake's Unlimited, a local business, has volunteered to bring pizzas later this afternoon deliver to all those sites so that those kids can get another meal as well. So we are prepared to at least cover this through Friday, as Carrie mentioned, and then we'll see where we go from there throughout the weekend.
Okay, so I guess we'll wait to hear from the organizers of that movement as to how many days we ought to expect this situation to be the case that we need to assist with, right? So may I guess later on the day Friday, as we know more, we'll make available whether or not this program will be in effect on Monday or however long it needs to persist.
Through Friday right now, Friday. As of now.
So, okay.
We will continue
today
to,
and tomorrow. Stay tuned. But I think the expectation is that if the walkout persists into next week, that our response will persist in equal fashion. Is that correct?
That's the school district's commitment.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for stepping up, staff. I know we... I appreciate the efforts that have been made to offer assistance in that at this time. Other questions relating to the schedule or additional meetings? If not, is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned.